This episode of Photobomb is brought to you by Headshot Tools Beta, the first platform built to help solve the unique problems of team and event headshot photographers. Automatically rename files, create customizable individual galleries, deliver headshots to any number of participants with one-click individual email delivery, and a whole lot more. Listen for later in the show to find out how you can get in on the Headshot Tools Beta.
You are listening to the Photobomb podcast with the world's greatest photographers, Boo Ray and Gary.
Welcome to the Photobomb podcast. My name is Boo Ray Perry, and joining me as always is Gary Hughes.
Sometimes being a parent makes you the stupidest version of yourself. Like the stuff that comes out of your mouth as a parent. You know, you ever had that experience where you find yourself saying things that your parents said to you? You know, like the things as a kid, like, what do we live in a barn? Were you raised in a barn? Close the door. Like all the things that you do as a parent that you never thought that you'd say. Like, if you don't like it, this is my house, you can live by my rules or whatever. You know, the things that parents say that you swore you'd never say,
right,
that you end up saying. Do you have anything like that with your kids?
Not really. There wasn't a whole lot I swore I would never say. Although my sister once got into it with my mother and started talking about all the things that she would never make her child do. And my mother wrote them down and then gave them to my sister when she was like 30 and had kids. That was quite entertaining. Just, here you go, by the way. Here's all the things that you're never supposed to do to your children that we did to you.
I would pay money. I would pay money for that list.
Yeah, I feel like I make my own stuff. You know, I do find myself saying all the time. Now, I did today when I was riding in the car with my daughter going to a dentist appointment, and I find myself saying, back in my day.
Oh, yeah.
Man, when you start saying back in my day, that's just, you know what? That you're gone. Well, you've gone, dude. You've gone.
That's it. You're around the bend. You're officially around the bend.
My point was, we were talking about music, and I was saying, you know,
I knew it was going to be about music. There was no way. I was going to ask you, what was the music lesson that you were going to be giving poor Sam?
It wasn't really, no, this was Mackenzie. She's the music person. And it wasn't really a lesson. It was just more of a question. I said, do you have any bands that you listen to? I said, it seems to me that modern music doesn't have a lot of bands, that the days of having a band and playing in bars and going on the road and doing horrible jobs and whatever until eventually you get discovered seems to have gone away. And she goes, oh, no, not really. There aren't a lot of bands. She goes, there are some bands that we still listen to, you know, like Green Day. I'm like, yeah, Green Day's 100 years old.
Yeah, Green Day, I think Green Day's first album, I may have been in fifth grade.
Yeah, I'm like, are there new bands? And she said, oh, just like a couple, but not really anymore. And that got into a whole discussion of how important producers are and how music really, people don't realize how much of a band or a song or an artist that they love, that really it's the producer that you love.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
The producer is really the one who creates it all.
And there are artists that work with the same producer every time, and then all of a sudden they'll change, and it's a completely different animal. And you see how much Dave Matthews is one of those famous ones. Like their producer for their first like four or five albums was Steve Lillywhite, who's a very famous music producer, Steve Lillywhite. And then like they switched, and their most, I think the album that they sold the most copies of, and this was maybe in the year 2000, in the year maybe 01, they came out with that song Every Day, and that was like all over MTV and everything. It was their first real big, like super, you know, retail store commercial success, whereas before they were really like a college radio kind of thing that started that way and just grew from this huge cult following, and they switched producers, and it was like, I don't like it. I don't like it anymore.
I think the best example of that would be the Beatles' Let It Be album, which was the first album they did without George Martin, and it was produced by Phil Spector, and he put choirs, and he put strings, and he put all this stuff, and the Beatles hated it.
Right.
They hated Let It Be. So, yeah, and then I'm always trying to make, okay, let me tell you about a guy named Mutt Lange.
You know, Mutt Lange.
You've never heard of Mutt Lange.
He was he married to Shania Twain?
He was. He made Shania Twain. Shania Twain wouldn't be Shania Twain without Mutt Lange, nor would AC/DC's Back in Black or Def Leppard's Pyromania or any rock album, hard rock album that you loved in the 80s. Mutt Lange produced it. He was right. The man, you know. And then what's the guy, Rick, the guy who founded Def Jam Records?
Oh, Rick Rubin.
Rick Rubin, who is considered like a guru, you know, that he's a way he can hear and just tell and get an artist to bring out what they want or whatever. But people just don't realize how much the producer is really responsible for the sound that you hear.
Oh, everything. Like, yeah. Everything. Like, you listen to, I remember there's a, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with Jimmy Eat World, right? But like, they put out an album and they released it as a double album, and one was the finished songs, and the first one were all the demos that they initially recorded to base the songs off of.
Oh, that's great.
Like, yeah, it's really cool. And you're like, oh.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's not even... How did it get from A to B?
Yeah, it's absolutely wild, man. Yeah, it's the producer does a lot, which is why somebody like Dave Grohl is so neat, because he has historically recorded and produced his own stuff, like right. At his house, like in his basement.
Right.
You know, like the first two or three Foo Fighters albums were all like he played all the instruments on 9 out of 11 of the tracks and produced the record himself, which is pretty wild, you know. So that, I mean, there is something to be said for that. So
I always liked there's a scene, VH1 did a movie about Def Leppard, and there's a yeah. scene in there where what's the guy from the Brat Pack played the dweeb in Michael Anthony Hall. Hall plays Mutt Lange. And they're putting together the Def Leppard album, and he's in the booth singing Bring It On the Heartache.
Bring It On the Heartache.
Is it Heartache or Heartbreak?
Whatever, doesn't matter. Heartbreak, Bring It On the Heartbreak.
And he's doing that build up to the chorus where he goes, you got the best of me, whoa, can't you see? You got the best of me. And then he goes up an octave. Whoa, can't you see? You're bringing on the heart, right? And that buildup is like the Def Leppard sound, right? That's right. Like, you know, that's Def Leppard every time you hear it. And that was totally Mutt Lange. Mutt Lange was like, okay, I need you to go up an octave. And the guy's like, I can't go up an octave. And Mutt Lang's like, I'll fix it. You gotta scream. You gotta go up an octave right there. And he was like, okay. And he did. And then Mutt Lange fixed it. And that became Def Leppard's sound. And they became a multi-giant, you know, big band. That's what producers do.
Right. Yeah. 100%.
So you had a point to this story that I've now hijacked, as I always do. And let's circle back to things that you say that are embarrassing because your parents say them.
But just to quickly touch on, this is my children are little, and so they're way past the era of the music that like I consider iconic. Like, I like a lot of the music that they listen to, but kids come into contact with music, with old music, mostly through animated films that use the old music in it. So like, just this, the big movie in the house this week is Sing 2. And I don't know if you've seen Sing or Sing 2. This is by Illumination Studios, who brought you Despicable Me and the Minions and all that stuff. Illumination does a great job, but they always come in behind Pixar and Disney and everybody's minds and DreamWorks. But Illumination does a fantastic job. But Sing, great movie. And it's more of what you call a jukebox movie, really. It's just an excuse to use all these incredible songs, and then they make a story around it or whatever. But
I just interrupt you and say, did you ever see Gnomes?
Oh, I believe so.
Which was just an excuse to use every Elton John song ever made. The whole movie is nothing but Elton John songs.
Yeah, yeah. I like these jukebox movies. Are some of them are real bad, like it's just dumb, but Sing's actually pretty good. It's got a lot of heart. It's good. And it's Matthew McConaughey does the voice of a koala, which is great. You know, you can't fault Matthew Koalahay.
Koalas are always high.
Yeah, koalas.
So
absolutely.
Of course Matthew McConaughey is going to do the koala.
Yeah. First of all, I get no recognition for Matthew Koalahay. Like, nothing. Right. Like, that's... Anyway, well, please continue.
I didn't hear it. Did you say Matthew?
Because you were too busy stepping on my joke to hear it, is what happened.
I wanted to say something before you moved on. I thought you were going to move on.
Matthew Koalahay. Anyway,
is that literally that should be the name of the character? That's not the name.
No, it's Buster Moon. Buster Moon the koala. And so my kids now are listening to music, and in Sing 2, the music of U2 is heavily featured. And by God, whatever you think of U2, the Joshua Tree is a perfect record. Probably the best four songs on the first four songs of an album, maybe in all of the 80s. You know, it opens it, Where the Streets Have No Name, it busts right into Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For. You know, it's got like Bullet the Blue Sky, In God's Country. You know, it's like, bam, 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 bam. Just incredible track after incredible track.
Okay, well, that's a challenge now. I'm going to have to go and find an album that has... What are the first four songs?
The first four songs. Let's see. I'm going to Google that real quick. We'll just do YouTube Joshua Tree track list. And here we go. It's songs are, they're not in order on here, are they? No, they are not.
Oh, see, that's, you got to have them in order. Because I want to know what the first four, because I'll give you, I still haven't found what I'm looking for.
Where the Streets Have No Name, dude?
Okay,
come on.
I'll give you that one.
Okay, here we go. Song one, Where the Streets Have No Name. Two, I Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For. Three, With or Without You.
Right.
Four, Bullet the Blue Sky. Five, Running to Stand Still.
Yeah, see, the last four and five are a little weak.
Bullet the Blue Sky is not weak. Not weak. Not at all. But it is a little bit introspective, I give you. But, like, I think it's one of the strongest songs on the album. You know, it's, in fact, that side one is much better than side two, although side two has In God's Country, which is also a great record, and but anyway, I digress. We go back to Sing 2, which features a lot of the music of U2, including those songs, and now my kids are listening to this soundtrack, and so they love listening to Where the Streets Have No Name, and I Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For, but the Sing 2 version of it. And so I'm making breakfast on Saturday morning, and my daughter's singing. I said, hey, let me play for you the album. By the way, 1987 is when this album came out. I was 6 years old. And so when I decided to play this, I said, the band's called U2. I said, I know you know these songs, so let me play them for you. And the intro to Where the Streets Have No Name is a bit long, right? There's a little musical interlude leading up to it. And she goes, what is this? She's like, it's all music. It's so boring. And then the song kicks in, and then she recognizes, she starts singing, like, I want to run, you know, and she goes, I like the Sing 2 version better. I'm like, well, at least you know it, you know. Yep. But and then the other song that's on that soundtrack that they love, and it's given me the opening to introduce them to a great artist, is Let's Go Crazy by Prince.
Well, yeah.
And so that, and now they know every single word to Let's Go Crazy by Prince, my 8-year-old, my 5-year-old, my 3-year-old. And so they're just singing Let's Go Crazy by Prince all the time. So I'm like, let me introduce you to some other songs by this incredible artist. And they're into it. So, like, it's, I'm using these jukebox movies as an intro to bring, let them know about all these great artists. And then I also have to listen to Dua Lipa, whoever that is. But anyway, so let me get back to my original thing about kids and the things that you say.
Before you do that, I'll just point out the same thing happened to me, and it happens to me all the time. And it's too much information to try and share it all. That's what makes it so hard. Because, like, today, riding back from the dentist, she had some song playing. I don't know who it was, some rap band or whatever. And then the chorus comes in.
Rap band or whatever, yeah.
Yes, and then the chorus comes in, and it's, take a look at my girlfriend. She's the only one I got. Yeah, Supertramp.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, okay, wait. That's Supertramp. Do you know who Supertramp is? Well, now it's like, oh, we got to talk about Supertramp and Breakfast in America and Take the Long Way Home. And you know, and it's like every song she plays, there's something else. It's attached to something from my generation. And now I've got to expand it to her. But the great thing is, occasionally I'm like, oh, what about the Cars? She's like, I know the Cars. Bless you, my child, for knowing who the Cars are.
Have you found Mackenzie since she jumped out of the moving vehicle and rolled down the street to get away from you?
No, she's not that way. She digs it. Like, because, like, listening to her playlist, like, that song comes on. And then it's followed by I Was Made to Love Her by Stevie Wonder. And then it's followed by Green Day. And then it's followed by, you know, some, Since You've Been Gone by Rainbow.
Yeah.
Since You've Been Gone, which is in the new Guardians movie.
Well.
God bless you, by the way, Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
For introducing a new generation.
Yeah, the music editor on that, the music supervisor is just
great.
Killing the game with the bringing great music to people. Except if I have to watch one more, like, slow motion fight scene to a Beastie Boys song, I just feel like that's a trope that,
like, Sabotage.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Or No Sleep Till Brooklyn.
Right.
Or Sabotage. Yeah. Yeah. As please, you know. By the way, missed a huge opportunity there to make a fight scene to Intergalactic, which I think is much more appropriate for Guardians of the Galaxy.
Sure.
Which is a great Beastie Boys song that is totally overlooked. At any rate, so. We go to these birthday parties, right? Like, I live at birthday parties. I was at a kid's birthday party yesterday. I got four kids. They have friends. We live at birthday parties on the weekends. It's just sort of that young kid life. And we had trouble getting out of the house. And with Julie and I, we were just talking in the car. It's like, we need a new birthday strategy because we treat every one of these birthdays like it's the event of the season that we have to be at. And my 3-year-old starts preschool next year. And then my son, who's 11 months old, like he's going to start school in a couple of years. He'll be in preschool. And then we're going to have 4 kids in school, all with birthday parties to go to every single weekend. We need a better strategy, because honestly, if I have to keep going to these kids' birthday parties for kids, if it's a family that we're friends with, I'm there. If it's just some kid like whose parents I couldn't pick out of a police lineup, I'm just not going to go anymore. I'm just not going to, like, it's Saturday, it's Sunday. I want to like mow the lawn. I don't mow the lawn, but you know, I want to like do some work around the house and chill and drink coffee. I don't want to be rushing out the door at 9 a.m. to go to one more trampoline park or splash pad or something to have to do this again. I'm going to kill myself. I'm just going to climb up on my roof and I'm going to take a header onto my driveway just so that I don't have to go to any more kids' birthday parties.
Welcome to 4 children, Gary.
Yeah, I know.
You knew what the job was when you signed up for it.
Actually, that's not true. This is a consequence.
I had an inclination of what the job was going to be.
This particular consequence, I did not foresee that all my weekends were now going to be children's birthday parties. At any rate, we ended up having a nice time. We always do. But so we're at a birthday party last weekend. And these are good friends of ours, people who we like and want to hang out with. And so we spent the day there. And there are always goodie bags at kids' parties. Now, I don't know when this started happening, but there are always goodie bags. Every kid who attends gets a bag with a bunch of little favors in it that they get to go home.
Yes, I'm with you on that. When did it turn out that everyone who's not having a birthday gets a present?
Yeah, and here's the other thing. A lot of the parties are like, well, the kid who's in school with the birthday kid is invited. And if you bring siblings, then you're on your own paying for them to get into wherever we're going. And there won't be a goodie bag for them. So that's real freaking fun.
Oh, great. Mr. Three Siblings with. Over here.
Yeah. So we've been having that explain at birthday parties to my kids. It's like, you guys, the two of you don't get goodie bags because this is Ellie's classmate and they only have enough goodie bags for the invited classmates or whatever. And so it's actually been kind of a cool lesson. It's like, life ain't fair.
Yeah, it seems like a good lesson.
And sometimes
lesson,
people get stuff that you don't get and you're just going to have to kind of survive that.
Learn to manage your expectations.
Yes, exactly. As part of this party last weekend, in the goodie bags were whoopee cushions.
Okay.
Whoopee cushions.
The old-fashioned fart machine.
Yes, the old-fashioned fart machine. This is the analog, baby. It's all analog.
The analog version.
The analog fart machine is what I like to call it. And so the thing is, what happens when you give 25 8-year-olds whoopee cushions at a party? You tell me what you think happens.
Oh, what I think happens is the best party I've ever been to with 8-year-olds.
Hilarity ensues, yeah. and it's great. Like but what happens when I bring the one kid home from the party, and that one kid has a whoopee cushion, right? So now there are a couple of things that are happening. My oldest is now fighting with her sisters over the whoopee cushion because everybody wants to play with the whoopee cushion because it's the hot new item in the house, the analog fart machine. And then on top of that, the whoopee cushion also happens to terrify my toddler, the 11-month-old baby. Every time the whoopee cushion goes off, he gets hysterical and starts screaming. It's so loud and abrupt, it terrifies him. And Ellie, my oldest, thinks that this is pretty funny. So she keeps jumping on the whoopee cushion. She puts the whoopee cushion on the ground over by Gibson and then sits on it. And then the baby freaks out. And she thinks it's the funniest thing in the world. And objectively, it's mildly funny. But the kid's legitimately terrified of the whoopee cushion. Just like a dog's in a vacuum cleaner. Just not a fan. So she's scaring the baby. She's fighting with her sisters about the whoopee cushion. And we're having this whole big dust up in the house over the whoopee cushion. And finally, I send her to her room and I take the whoopee cushion. I said, I'm going to take this. And she goes, when do I get the whoopee cushion back? And I'm holding the whoopee cushion in my hand, shaking it at her. And I said, you can have the whoopee cushion back when you're mature enough to handle it.
Such a long way to go, but what is definitely worth it. That joke was absolutely worth it. It's a long way to get there, but the payoff was absolutely perfect.
When you're mature enough for this whoopee cushion.
You're mature enough for this whoopee cushion.
I'm shaking the whoopee cushion.
You can have it then. Damn it. Grow up a little bit, and I'll give you back the whoopee cushion. Oh, that's great. Fantastic. Have this whoopee cushion when you're mature enough to handle it.
And the words are coming out of my mouth and I'm like, stop.
And then you're like, podcast, No, podcast, dude. Don't forget this. We've got to tell a story.
I've been holding on to this for a week. I very rarely think about in advance what I'm going to talk about on the show.
I think we all know that.
Yeah, but it's very obvious in my performance. But like, this is one thing I was like, this has been burned in my brain. I was like, I have to tell this story. And then trying to keep a straight face once you realize what you've said.
Right.
You know, and then she's all upset that I got the whoopee cushion and I just have to just stone face it and then slowly back out and close the door to the room and then just shake my head. Be like, life is so stupid. That's sometimes.
Great. I love that.
Life is just so dumb.
So here's the thing, a little bit talking about things your kids don't know, that you want to talk about legacy, right? You want to talk about you make a mark in this world and you do something and you have a legacy and you want people to remember you after you're gone. And this is a perfect example of how futile that can be. Watching a documentary with my wife and my kids come in and I go, hey, do you know who this is? And they're like, no. And I go, you don't know Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Really?
And one daughter goes, no. And the other daughter goes, he's like a bodybuilder with a funny accent, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, that's who he is. Also, the biggest movie star on the planet in the 80s, six-time winner of the Mr. Olympia competition, who pretty much changed bodybuilding and introduced it to the world, and governor of California.
Yeah, it's not like he was in a couple of big movies.
Yeah.
Like, just starring in Terminator 2 would have been plenty. Not to mention the seminal holiday classic, Jingle All the Way,
yes,
which I think needs to be on every family's Christmas playlist, by the way.
Well, I'm watching this three-hour documentary about Arnold, and you're seeing everything that he did and why he did it, and it was actually a good documentary. And then you realize that his hope of having made a difference and being remembered when he's gone is going to end up just being, you know, the next generation is like, oh, the guy with the funny accent.
Yeah, that's, you know, you can't imagine, I'm sure, how much he has struggled with that accent trying to become a movie star. First, it was like, you're going to be Conan the Barbarian, where it doesn't matter what you say.
Well, no, actually, first it was a movie called Hercules in New York that was, his accent was so bad that they overdubbed him.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then it became Conan. Yeah.
He struggled mightily against his accent, overcome incredible odds to become the most famous person in like three or four different genres, like moved into politics, governor of California. Like, there's literally everything that he's done, and your daughter walks into a room and goes, he's got the guy with the funny accent.
Yeah,
right?
That's it. Like, that's what we got. You're Arnold Schwarzenegger, and that's how you are remembered.
Yeah, yeah. You ever hear the joke about the you screw just one sheep?
Yeah, one goat.
You screw one goat.
Yeah, that's right, and that's your name forever. So yeah, it's a good documentary, by the way, and I was happy to see that he was up front and address the thing that happened with his wife that caused his
divorce. Well, you had concerns about him and his housekeeper. You said you had trouble watching his movies and stuff.
Yeah, because it just bothered me. You know, what was so crazy was that they were in therapy when his wife just straight up asked him, is Henry your son? And he went, yes. And this was like, Henry's like 10 at the time. And you know, she's like, I've spent the last 10 years around this kid who, you know, I mean, whoo ha. So yeah, so that was crazy. But he addressed it and he talked about it and he talked about his childhood and the type of man his father was and his lack of emotion, you know, and how, you know, and how he's always been driven. He has a vision. I have a vision. I have a dream. And I just follow that dream. And I think work forward all the time. Stay busy. Stay busy. You do not sit around and feel sorry for yourself. Every day I get up, I go out, I scoop the horse poop. I stay busy. He does.
That is, without
horrible.
A doubt,
it's horrible.
The finest Arnold Schwarzenegger impersonation I've ever heard.
I wasn't like trying hard. I wasn't trying as hard. Okay.
I'm tearing up.
Okay. Let me just stop. Okay. Fine.
Go for it.
I know what you're getting at.
Mm-hmm.
I know what you're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we all know that I am not great in impressions. And I know that you're the guy with the impressions.
It is
and
kind
I
of
I try
thing,
to do yeah. Arnold, that it's not going to be great. And I just, there's a little resentment that you lord over me, your ability to do great impressions. And I know that you've got a great Arnold. I know that he's right there. And that you're just waiting to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm gonna give you, this is it, right? This is going to be the last time. I'm going to let you do just one more time an impression that upstages me and makes me afraid to do impressions on the show again for another year.
Okay, I'm sorry I made you feel that way.
But this is it. Get it out of your system right now.
All right, I got to get into character.
Do you want to lift some weights or something? You want to just to get the... All right, okay. Give us a little Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Hey, get to the chopper now! Get to the chopper! Hey!
That's good. That's very good.
Was it good? Was it pretty good?
And, you know, what's great is that I knew it was him, even though you didn't do any of his signature lines.
Come with me if you want to live.
Yeah. I'll be back would be the one I think that you would do.
Really? Get to the chopper is literally...
No, yeah, you know, it's funny. I had this discussion watching the documentary was that, you know, I'll be back is the most iconic line, but I always liked come with me if you want to live.
Yeah, come with me if you want to live is one of my favorite lines.
Not a tumor.
It's not a tumor.
Kindergarten Cop, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The one of my favorite Schwarzenegger lines of all time, he was in a movie called The Eraser.
Right.
And it wasn't a huge hit, I don't think. It was the 90s. It was just another Schwarzenegger action movie.
Vanessa Williams, I believe?
Yes, it was. And so he's rescuing Vanessa Williams from a crocodile. I believe this movie, it's been a long time, takes place in this city, but I'll never forget this moment in the theater because I think it was the first time I just laughed out loud in a movie, just like how ridiculous it was. Like it broke the suspension of disbelief, but this crocodile or alligator, I don't remember which, comes up and is like trying to drag them underwater. And then he shoots the crocodile in the head and he goes, "Now your luggage."
Yeah. Yeah. Catchphrases.
So good.
I thought what was really interesting was they Sylvester Stallone was in the documentary and they talked about how the two of them had a rivalry in the 80s to be the big action star. And Sylvester Stallone's a smart guy because he talked about how what their thing was that their type of action star was a person who really conveyed through action as opposed to being a lot of dialogue. It was mostly action. It was a lot of action. And they both did that and they both did it well. And their rivalry is so great they couldn't be in the same room. And, you know, and Schwarzenegger said, "That's my thing. To really push myself, I have to have an enemy." And so I made Schwarzenegger my enemy. And my whole goal was to beat him. And he was the same way when he was a bodybuilder. But one of the things that I liked that Stallone said that I thought was interesting, I'd never thought about it. He said, "But we had a different style." He goes, "Like Arnold's character, if you look at his movies, Arnold never really gets hurt in his movies. Whereas I was always getting the crap beat out of me in my movies. I was always just beat all the pieces, not just as Rocky, but even as Rambo, whatever. I was always just getting tore up. But Arnold gets blown out of a car and he just stands up and walks away and everything's fine. Like he was indestructible and I was the opposite." And I thought, yeah, I never thought about that before. But yeah,
the people's action star, you know, more like a like Bruce Willis later kind of sort of became that kind of an action star where he was sort of always like getting.
Well, I saw a thing yesterday where they said you have to eliminate one guy and you have to eliminate all of his work. Who's it going to be? And the choices are
Hitler.
No. Well, I don't remember his film work so much, but okay.
You don't because I just erased it.
Oh, there you go.
It's gone now.
And the choices are Mel Gibson, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Bruce Willis, Harrison Ford. Maybe it's just those four.
Okay.
And Arnold Schwarzenegger. I'm sorry.
So Schwarzenegger, Mel Gibson, Harrison Ford, Bruce Willis.
And Stallone.
Oofed.
You eliminate him and you eliminate everything he's ever been in. Right off the bat, there's one you know is not going to be the one that gets eliminated, and that's going to be...
The one I would eliminate is probably Harrison Ford.
You would?
Oh, yeah.
So Star Wars is gone?
No. I'm assuming since he would just be replaced, somebody else would have played him.
No, it's gone.
Oh.
You erase that actor, you erase every film they were in.
Then Schwarzenegger, gone.
Thank you. That's exactly right. Because Harrison Ford shouldn't even be included because there's no way you're erasing Star Wars.
Or Indiana Jones, for that matter.
Or Indiana Jones, but especially Star Wars. Star Wars is too big.
Or 6 Days, 7 Nights, that movie did with Anne Heche. That was pretty good.
That's huge.
That was a big one for me as a child.
But then it always comes down to one movie. Bruce Willis, Die Hard is, you can't get rid of Die Hard, and you can't get rid of The Road Warrior.
Or Braveheart?
I've never been a big Braveheart fan, but Road Warrior to me is iconic. And so you can't get rid of that. And you can't get rid of Rocky, won Best Picture. But Schwarzenegger, you lose the Terminator.
It would be different if the Terminator, if they'd kept up that franchise in a way that was good.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, they made the first movie was good.
I mean, Terminator 2 was pretty awesome. But no, after listen, that, it listen. Was downhill.
Yeah, Terminator 1 was good. Very 80s, but good. Terminator right. 2 was really good. It was a great movie. It holds up completely. I think it's a great film. Terminator 3, trash. Then you got the one after that was like, they did that one with Christian Bale, which was fine, you know. And then they did after that, they did Genesis, which was fine. And then they did Dark Fate, which was probably the best one. But it's 35 years later or something like that. And it's sort of like, so I could.
One you said was probably the best one. Was that the one?
I'd say Dark Fate. It's the one where Linda Hamilton came back.
Okay, right. Yes, that was a good one. Yeah.
Probably the best one since 2.
Yeah, probably, yeah. And then she goes and finds him. He's chopping wood somewhere or something.
Right? Yeah, yeah. He's I have a family now. I am a family robot or whatever, you know, and there he is. Yeah.
You know, what's great about the first Terminator was that they didn't want him for the role of the Terminator. They wanted him for the role of the soldier that comes back.
Kyle Reese.
Yeah, Kyle Reese. And but he kept talking about the Terminator to Cameron and just how he thought the Terminator should be. And Cameron's like, then why don't you play it? And he was like, I don't want to play a bad guy. And he was like, and so he goes, go home and think about it. And then after he thought about it more and more, he came back and he goes, okay, I'll play the robot. I'll play the Terminator. You know who they recently were going to cast to play the Terminator?
Wait. What year was that? 87?
Maybe. Yeah, a little earlier.
Okay, so let's say it's 1985. I'm going to say the original Terminator was going to be played by Christopher Lloyd.
No, close.
Yeah?
No. They originally had another guy cast, and then they decided that he just couldn't be believed as a cold and heartless killer. And it was
Michael Keaton.
It was O.J. Simpson. I'm not kidding. O.J. Simpson was going to play the Terminator.
They couldn't picture him.
They gave it to Arnold, and then Arnold said in the documentary, he goes, I guess they couldn't picture O.J. Simpson as a cold-blooded killer.
Well, his acting career was all comedy, right? Like, he did the airplane movies and stuff like that, or The Naked Gun or something. Like, he was in one of those movies. So, like, all right, okay. You know, just that particular interaction didn't age well. But, you know, who knows who people are going to turn out to be. anyway.
It's about that time. It is time for photography news.
Photography news. Most headshot photographers struggle to organize and deliver team and event headshots. They either do everything manually, taking up hours of their time, or they homebrew a complex system combining multiple apps. That's why we built Headshot Tools, a comprehensive solution specifically tailored to solve the unique problems headshot photographers face. You'll be confidently delivering the best client experience to any size group, without breaking a sweat. Right now, Headshot Tools is in a closed beta where users will get unlimited access to all features, including unlimited jobs, storage, and uploads for only $59 a month. Automatic file renaming, custom signup forms, individual galleries, mass email notification, and retouched image selection, all in one easy-to-use platform. To request your beta access code, just email support@headshottools.com and say, I want beta access. That's support@headshottools.com.
All right, so a little warning to you. We knew this was going to happen. We're seeing the first of it now that it's just started to hit online, and that is AI and politics. So I really just wish that everyone who's going into the election seasons that are coming up, please just don't believe any picture you see in any way, shape, or form attached to a politician, because we're already starting to see it. Somebody's coming out with a campaign. This is not his campaign, but someone trying to help Ron DeSantis here in Florida. And they're putting out pictures of Trump hugging Dr. Fauci, and they are AI generated.
Yep.
And this is just the very tip of what we are going to see. It's going to be literally, you know, Joe Biden hugging Hitler. It's going to be, you name it, except there's going to be a lot of instances where you're going to not know it's a parody or not know that it's a mock-up.
And it'll be presidential and Senate candidates, you know, dressed in black and brown face or wearing Nazi uniforms. And it'll be full talking. Right, but
that's the stuff, though, that when you see it, you go, okay. But this is the stuff, the really, really deep, insidious stuff where it's just, if we can just show a picture that could actually be real, you know, that could actually just be real, like, oh, you know, to give the impression. Like in this particular example, they showed six pictures. Three of them were real of Trump in close contact or next to him. And then three of them were computer generated.
Right.
So the idea is just to show that he was buddy buddy with this guy who, you know, the crazy people have a problem with. And let me just say that right now, by the way, if you're a person out there who thinks that COVID was a hoax, I'm perfectly fine with you never listening to the podcast again. You know, I mean, we try to stay whatever, but COVID has killed 6 million people worldwide, several people that I've known. So, you know, you just really need to, okay? COVID was a real thing. That's the insidious way that they'll do it, is they'll just do small little things.
Right.
Put someone's face in a crowd.
Yeah. Well, you can imagine how many politicians are going to have, are going to be AI'd into pictures with Jeffrey Epstein over the next couple of years.
Oh, yeah. As
Like, you know.
Yeah. We're going to see
like
that.
On Jeffrey Epstein's private jet or whatever. And they'll all be there. Yeah. I would say that it's good advice to just say, if you see a photo that upsets you related to politics, just assume it's not real.
Yeah.
You know, and I think you'll be better off. In fact, you should only be able to vote based on what you can read. And then, you know, like, go find an article. And this is where you're going to get the big difference is going to be to check your sources. And so if you're on some like website, some weird, you know, independent, you know, zine web blog news site by some guy in some basement somewhere. And you're like, yeah, this guy tells it like it is. You know, that guy doesn't have fact checkers. You know who that guy doesn't have? That guy doesn't have anybody to answer to when they publish nonsense. As much as people are like crapping all over like the media, the mainstream media, like you can get the information, and it's always been the responsibility of the reader to filter that, to weigh that against facts and to look at multiple points of view and to form an opinion. So like you're always going to be stuff you're going to read that's going to upset you. But like reading just a headline or just looking at a picture and not thinking any further about it, like that's what they want. That's what those people, they want you to form an opinion. They want to put that in your brain. It's a form of brainwashing, of mind control, where they're just going to put that picture in your brain. And even though if consciously you know that it's not real, like that still puts it in your brain. And enough of that happens and it really starts to change your brain patterns and your way of thinking. So like, I would encourage you, if you're active in, you know, in politics and you're concerned about these things, it's like immediately go into Facebook, and you can filter a whole bunch of things out of Twitter, of Facebook, of Instagram, and make sure that you don't see certain things. I would just, if there's a button to just eliminate all political messaging of any kind and just enjoy my friends. And then when I want to know about an issue, I'll go to the news source, to various news sources, and aggregate them myself and do my research and form my opinions. But like, it's going to be very, very difficult and very strange to see how AI image generation and AI video are going to change elections moving forward. It's going to have to be legislated to the point where any AI generated content is going to have to like have a stamp on it or some kind of marker in the code, so that, you know, they're going to have to make algorithms for social media that recognize it, and that it'll give like a, this image contains AI generated content. Like
there should be a stamp. There should be like a an icon that is recognizable and bright and colorful, like a color wheel, right?
Like the radioactive logo.
Yeah, like a radioactive
lime green radioactive.
And it has to
symbol.
Be in the corner of any image that contains any AI work on it whatsoever.
Right.
Know?
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. and or shoot. I mean, or Photoshop to a certain extent, maybe. Anything added to the image, you'd have to have that stamp on it.
Yeah, I think specifically. But the thing is with the AI image generation, Photoshop at least takes some skill. You know, like AI image generation, like almost anybody could walk into DALL-E and make something, you know, where I'm not saying using AI doesn't take skill, but like just to generate an image where it's like, you know, Donald Trump kissing Dr. Fauci or whatever, you know, like that.
And it's only going to get easier because they just released a new beta for Adobe Express. I don't know if you use Adobe Express. I use it all the time.
I do. Yeah, I like Adobe Express quite a bit. I think it's along the lines of sort of a Canva.
Yeah, my wife uses Canva, right? She does her with her shop and stuff. She uses Canva, but I use Adobe Express because it's included with the Adobe suite that I pay for in order to get Photoshop.
Yeah, and it's kind of neat.
So I use it, for instance, all the thumbnails for my videos are just created in Adobe Express. And it's great and tons of templates, really easy, drag and drop, make it however you want to. And now in the new beta, they are really going full force with it. They are going to include the Firefly AI, which is the AI that they're including now into Photoshop that allows you to, you know, replicate backgrounds or extend backgrounds and stuff like that. They're going to include that into Adobe Express. They're going to make Adobe Express work seamlessly in networking opportunities with the other Adobe products. So, for example, if you're working in Adobe Express with a Photoshop file and you've got someone else working on that file and they change that file in the cloud, it also changes it in Adobe Express. So you can link all that. And that's a really big thing now, Gary. We're seeing this all the time now. Like everybody, Fuji's doing it, Capture One is doing it, where the whole collaborative thing with photography, it seems like more and more there's like a new update coming and I'm like, oh, what are they going to give us? And it's always like, oh, now you can work on, you can show these images to someone in New York while you're shooting them. And I'm like, I don't need that. Why aren't you giving me something I need? But somebody must need it because everybody seems to be doing it.
Yeah, what I really need is just a really reliable background removal. Like even the AI one built into Photoshop still isn't great.
No.
And I just made a video about it, as a matter of fact. But like, just let me do a batch where it could just pull the background cleanly off of 100 headshots. And you can double my subscription price because I'll pay, because I'm already paying that much money to have it done.
Well, what they're doing with the AI, though, is not just with that, with like Adobe Express, but now you'll be able to describe what you want. So whereas before, you had to go looking for a font that looks a certain way for this thing you're creating. Now you can describe the font. You know, I want a font that looks like it's made out of whoopee cushions, and the AI will generate it for
you. Oh, I've seen that. That's wild. Yeah, all I really need, the only font that anyone needs is Papyrus. You know, just a
right.
little
Papyrus. If you've got Papyrus and Comic Sans. If you've got those two, you're good.
By the way, try to watch Avatar 2, The Way of Water. It hits streaming this week. 3.5 hours long. There's a whole hour in the middle that's just about making friends with a whale. Like, it's just a bad movie. It's one of the best looking movies I've ever seen. It's a horrendously bad film. And please, if you're like, yeah, I mean, if you're on the fence, like, you can probably watch the first 30 minutes of it, marvel at its beauty, and then shut it off immediately because it's just a bad bad movie.
Oh,
but if you like movies about blue cat people befriending whales, no spoilers, then this is your movie. And if you have 4 hours to kill, because it's going to be 4 hours, because you're going to have to pause the movie and get up and pee that many times, because that's how long the movie is. But anyway, sorry, I don't know why I went on that rant, but there you go. Okay, so big news from Apple this week. Got lots and 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 lots of Apple news, because Apple did its WWF WCW SmackDown this week, and that's very exciting stuff. You know, they the one guy hit the other guy with a folding chair. There was a jump off of a ladder, and it all happened virtually inside the new Apple Vision Pro VRAR headset device. Now this is really freaking amazing. It's also nobody I know will buy one, but it is also really, really amazing. Boo-ray, I'm going to pitch it to you like I'm going to sell it to you.
Okay.
What if I told you that for less than the price of a giant OLED flat screen TV, a surround sound system, and a laptop, and a projector, and all these other things, I could just give you a thing that you put on your head that does all of those things?
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, I'm listening. What else does it do?
Well, it basically does all these crazy things. It's really hard to explain what it does, but essentially it's like it's going to eliminate the need for any kind of entertainment system in your house eventually. Right now, like, so you put it on and it's got some really kind of cool stuff, really creep stuff. It's got a gazillion little cameras on the inside and infrared things and a zillion little cameras on the outside, and it reads your environment. And then it turns your entire environment and augmented reality in real time into something where you could just pull up a big screen and watch a movie, and you could make the screen 500 inches across, take up your whole wall in your living room, and it puts the music right into your ears. And it'll even take the entire environment around you, and you could sit on the moon while you watch the movie. It's wild.
I've done something like this with, I have a VR, and you can do it with there. You'd be in a theater and there's a giant screen. But I think the big difference is that with the Apple, it's 4K.
Yeah, it's two 4K screens, one for each eye, basically roughly 4K. You know, you watch the product videos. Apple's so, so good at these product launch videos. And it's sort of like everybody lives in like an idealized version of the near future or whatever.
Right.
That's kind of the vibe or whatever. And everybody dresses really well and has houses that are beautifully decorated. I just want to see me sitting on my, you know, my Costco couch in my living room with this thing strapped to my head, having to take it off my head every 10 seconds because one of my kids has pooped themselves or something. Like, this is for the double income, no kids people. But I think it's an incredible piece of technology. They've got it's really hard. If you haven't watched it, just go watch the video. This is very potentially useful in a lot of ways and will do a lot of really incredible things. I had a couple of questions, though. One is, so it's good for people who live alone because you can't watch TV with a friend unless they also are sitting next to you on the couch with one of them. You can see the person's eyes through it, but it's like a weird, like, fake of their eyes.
You're not actually seeing their eyes. They're projecting their eyes onto a screen.
Yeah, an out-facing screen, which is weird. The other thing, it's like it does this whole thing where it's like, and you can use this to have amazing entertainment on an airplane or whatever. And I was like, this thing doesn't cover your ears and it doesn't put, it's like it literally, like the person next to you will be able to hear the movie you're watching. Like, I think
there's
really
no headphone
jack,
because even my head, my system has a headphone jack.
I don't know. I didn't see one. And maybe.
Here's the thing.
All right, go for it, buddy.
I've got a VR system. And of course, you know, Meta is pushing to do all this stuff in VR and so forth. But what I haven't seen really done yet, and is something I read about that Microsoft, somebody did a story because Microsoft brought them over to their labs to show them what they were working on. And this was the coolest thing. And it was the same thing. It was for enhanced reality like you're talking about. He put on the glasses and he could still see the room, but now there was a table in the middle of the room. It wasn't there before, you know, and there was stuff on the table. So you could do a presentation. You were in the room, so forth. But here was the coolest thing, I thought. He said, I put on the glasses and suddenly a little view screen came up in my view, and it was a guy. And the guy goes, hi, I'm Dave, and I'm an electrician, and I'm going to help you fix that wall switch. Look over there. You see that wall switch? And I said, yep. And he goes, walk over to it. So he walks over to the wall switch, and there's a switch there on the wall, and there's a tray with some tools. He goes, okay, right. So here's what I want you to do. Take the panel off. And he takes the panel off, because he can see. He takes the panel off. He goes, all right, you see this red wire right here? And then on his screen, in his real vision, he's looking at this. There's a circle suddenly around the red wire that he's looking at. And the guy's like, okay, so, and then he goes, now look over at your tools. He looks at his tools. He circles the one he wants him to pick up. Pick up that tool, cut that wire, do this. And he walks him through step by step how to fix this wall switch. And
yeah,
I thought,
that's pretty rad.
Now that, why aren't we seeing that? Why aren't we at the point yet where you can call up your air conditioner isn't working, you know, or whatever, and just go out to your air conditioner with these goggles on and do everything the guy tells you. And instead of having to come and do the service check, you can do everything for him and he can see it. And he can go, okay, yeah, I can tell what your problem is. You need a compressor. I'll be out there tomorrow to put one on. Instead of having to make an appointment to have him come and look for the compressor or oh gosh, think about
it. And now wait for it though. How long before now that's AI?
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah, that's an AI
repairman.
Think about medical, you know? Think about being able to put something on and somebody, what's your emergency? I said that this man has just collapsed at the recital.
Dial a doc, like you could say, yeah. Like, oh, my kid cut their head. Do I need to take him to the emergency room over this heel?
Yeah, do this. Here's how you save this guy's life. We think he's just drowning. Okay, here's what you do. I can see him, and I'm going to walk you exactly what to do. I mean, that, I think, is like, whoo, why aren't we seeing that? Instead, it's, oh, make it look like you have a movie screen in your house. Okay, well, a lot of people do have a movie screen in their
house.
That
was the initial thing with the iPhone, right? When the iPhone launched, the iPhone 3G or whatever it was called, and all of the apps that it said, it was like, shake the phone and it'll tell you where to go to dinner. It was all really kind of mostly dumb stuff, but like what that revolution that began with that platform, well, everything that we do now with phones, nobody could envision all the things it could be used for when it launches. Their job is to sort of make the technology that breaks the mold and then let the market and innovation take it the rest of the way. And so I have, this thing is cool. It's $3,500, which you could argue 6 ways from Sunday, whether it's worth it or not, I don't think it matters at all. It doesn't matter if you ever buy this particular product. The idea that this is going to become the standard of computing and interaction before too long. You know, like I have two monitors sitting in front of me right now. Each one of them was $1,000. And they take up a whole hell of a lot of, they take a whole lot of space on my desk. You know what I mean? Like, imagine editing photos like that. And you want to like put it on, 60 inches in front of you while you're sitting there. It takes up zero space.
I think the biggest problem they're going to have with, because Meta has been trying to push this. They're trying so hard to get everybody a virtual workspace. We could put this goggle on and now there's four people
but
in
Meta's
the room.
But Meta's stupid.
And they're all doing all this kind of stuff. Here's the problem they're going to have, and I don't know how they're going to get around it. And the problem is that you want to be able to see the person that you're talking to if you can. And
well, they did.
Can't do that. No, because you've got the goggles on.
No, wrong.
Oh, this that's right. It creates an avatar of you. That
I mean,
looks
it's
like
creepy
you.
As hell, but like, you
yeah,
know,
but it's
like,
exactly. They've got to get it to the point of Ready Player One.
It'll get better, you know, but I mean, just the idea that every time this technology comes out, like, you know, the iPhone wasn't the first touchscreen phone, it wasn't the first smartphone, but it definitely set the stage for everything that would come after it, you know, and the iPad probably wasn't the first tablet or thing, you know, like, but like all of these things, they don't necessarily make the very first one, but they come at it in a particular angle. So yes, Oculus exists. And then there are other companies that are doing things like this, but what Apple brings to it is like the sexiness. You know what I mean?
I know. And that's why it cracks me up how they think it's so sexy when you look at how everyone just condemned Google Glass.
Right, exactly. Yeah, because Apple has that brand, you know, authority. They have that, like, whatever Apple does, the general populace, it's like, it's considered cool and trendy and sexy and interesting, and they present it in a beautiful way. Everything looks really polished. And so there's that, it's just got a really strong brand with a really strong cool factor, which is why they rarely release a new product. They will update products, but very rarely. Like, if you really look at what they make, they don't really have that many products.
No.
They have like 20 products. Like, it's a very, very small ecosystem of products. And yet they have a building that looks like Starfleet headquarters to house the 20 products that they make, which right. is just mind blowing. You know, so like, I don't know that I will ever get one of these. If $3,500, I'm like, that's, you know, that's halfway to funding my IRA for the year. Like, I don't think I'd do that. I got 4 or 5 29 plans that I have to fund on a monthly basis, you know. But the shift in it, now that Apple says, this is okay, it's cool, and as much as you may love or hate that, and I get that people hate that, and it is frustrating to people who aren't necessarily Apple users or fans or devotees, or they don't buy the hype. But the cool thing is, when Apple says something's cool, it generally tends to change the market, yeah. like a lot.
Oh,
remember,
yeah.
it was, yeah, when Apple gave, they do things to drive changes in tech all the time, when they're basically like, optical media is dead, and now nobody has a CD burner anymore. That was Apple that drove that. You know, when Apple said, everything's going to be Wi-Fi, we don't need to put Ethernet ports in stuff anymore, and you know what, that's fine. Apple was like, we don't need headphone jacks on our phones anymore because everybody's headphones are wireless, and that's, for the most part, they've been right, or at least made themselves right by bringing their force to bear on these changes in technology.
Well, it's always been a big deal for them. And I've always thought it was, I mean, from a business point of view, it was really good of them. Like, the headphone thing is a perfect example. Everybody went nuts. And Apple's like, we're going to force you to comply with the future.
Right.
This is the future, and we're going to force you to go. We're going to risk that you won't necessarily buy our phone because we are so far ahead of, you know, but fine. You don't want to buy an Apple phone because of this? That's fine. But in 2 years, you're not going to be using corded headphones anymore, no matter what phone you buy.
Yeah. 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 No, I think this could signal one of those similar changes where it's like, this is how computing is going to be done now, guys. Like, it's almost like Apple has to give the okay before everybody goes with it, you know, because they just drive such a hard trend. Like, there is even, you know, backlash from in young people for not having an iPhone because their chat bubble is green instead of blue and all that weird stuff. There's a certain like cachet that Apple products have, even with the people, you know, who don't own them or don't use them or maybe can't afford some of them. And so I don't know, man. I think that it's pretty exciting, but it's also like I have this vision of like me sitting around with my goggles strapped to my head and my kids and living life with goggles strapped to your head. And that just, that's going to be really bad for my hair regimen, to be honest with you. It's just mess. Like,
yeah, when I put mine on, it's like, you know, a little bit of hat hair now for the rest of the day.
Yeah, it's like, seriously, it's going to change hairstyles. Like, it's just going to be like, you know, they're going to have to do something a little bit better because I'm not going to get one until they have one that doesn't mess up my hair.
Well, listen, you say that, but I have said this repeatedly.
Hang on 1 second. So, sorry, Bombardier. Somebody just walked into the studio. I didn't have an appointment. And so that might derail things a little bit. And that's That's just going to be how it is in this episode, because I should have locked the door, but then they would have knocked on the door and then it would have been the same thing. But all is well. We will continue the conversation now. Apple, yes.
The conversation I want to have is, what does it say that you had to take 5 minutes to go talk to this client that neither one of us can remember exactly what we were talking about? We couldn't pick it up. I'm like, that's scary. That's scary that neither one of us, Gary, can remember. We were in a conversation.
We were in a fugue state.
What's that? I'm sorry. I'm distracted for a second. Okay. I'm sorry.
It's gone.
What am I doing? What's going on?
This is going to be like one of those character perspective chapter books where you like get really into the character, then it changes, and now you're the next chapter is a different character, and you're like, come on.
Yeah. I think bottom line is, you're right that until Apple does it, there's a cachet that Apple brings. Like Meta's been doing virtual reality for a while. I've got the headset, and I use the headset, and everything's cool, and the virtual reality space is neat, and there's all kinds of cool things you can do. But until Apple jumps in, you're always an outlier. Yes. Once Apple jumps in, then it's like, oh, okay, Apple's in. Now it's
like
real.
Those stupid shows where it would like, or the commercials like the Holiday Inn Express or whatever. And it's like, when I said it, I just did this or something like that. You know, like when you're sitting there saying a good idea, and all of a sudden another person comes into the room, they say the same idea, and everybody's like, yeah, what he said. Like, guys, I was just saying this. That's how everybody but Apple feels. Apple's the jerk that walks into the room and just says the thing that the other guy's been saying the whole time, just in a cooler way. They just move their hands like this when they say it. So, yeah, all right. So we'll move on from that. Real quick, a couple of quick hits is that the new Apple Macs, the Mac Studio desktop computer, just put out an M2 Ultra version, and they just brought back the Mac Pro, which is the gigantic cheese grater desktop, an update to that. They're basically the same computer. They have pretty much different specs, but you can get the Mac Studio for thousands less, as long as you don't mind not being able to have PCI Express slots to expand things. So if you are a very serious, you know, music person, video person, you're producing commercial stuff on a high level, and you need those PCI Express expansion ports to be able to add, you know, usability to your tower, then you're going to want a Mac Pro if you're a Mac person. If you're not that and you're literally everyone else, get the Mac Studio, because it's going to be literally 1/5 of the size and it's 60% of the cost for the same kind of fully specced out machine. Those are pretty cool. I'm glad I didn't buy the Mac Studio M1, because now that this is out, I'm like, ooh, I can actually get this, and that'll be pretty cool. They'll start at $2,000, and I think fully specced out, they're like $6,000, whereas the fully specced out Mac Pro cheese grater is like $11,800 or something like that, fully specced out, which is still quite a bit less than the fully specced out Mac Pros of the past. So anyway, and just one last quick hit is for Canon users. Canon has announced and started pre-sales on the RF 28mm Pancake lens. And so I'm kind of intrigued by this as a traveler. So it's 28 millimeter focal length. This means it'll be about what, 40 on an APS-C camera, or 28 on a full
23 frame? add 11 to that, so it's 35. A 23 millimeter is a 35 millimeter equivalent,
but this is a 28 millimeter, so this would be roughly about, yeah, so this would be 40-ish, I guess, on an APS-C. But 42? it's like an inch thick. It's one of those little pancake lenses. Make a perfect little, you know, compact traveling lens, and it's a pretty cool focal length, especially on full frame. 28 millimeters is great. It's like 35 with just a little extra. So, those are available for pre-order now. All right, what do you got?
That's about it. A couple of quick hits that I had that I just thought were cool. We were talking about technology and so forth, and that's two in the medical field having to do with cameras. They are developing a new smartphone camera that will help you diagnose skin cancer.
That's pretty cool.
Right, like this is the sort of stuff, you know, we do all the goofy stuff and here's going on, but this is what I like to see. I like to see when they're like, what ways can we use imaging now to do something really great? And here's a good example, you're talking about AI. Here's a great, you know, I don't know if they're doing it with AI, but this is the sort of thing we should be looking into doing with AI, where you can take a picture of the mole and the AI will look at it and come back and tell you whether or not it's probably cancerous. And the other one is that they are developed a pill that you swallow that has a camera, so they can look at your insides with this pill. Now, we've had this before, but what makes this unique is it is remote controllable. You have a magnetic belt that you wear around your body once the pill goes in, and then they can fly that pill around inside your intestines and your stomach.
How dangerous could that be? Like, how many horsepower does it have?
That's what I want to know.
I don't want this thing to come busting out my kidney.
Yeah, right.
Know?
But rip still, a hole they in my say when you talk about getting a colonoscopy or talk about getting a, you know, whatever. No, just swallow this pill. It's going to go all the way through your tract, and we're going to get video of everything.
Like, you don't have to get sedated, you know, and like the indignity of, or some people would say the sheer pleasure of a colonoscopy. You know, like the
That's true. I mean, that's going to be the biggest pushback against this, is that there are, for a lot of people, there's just a joy of the colonoscopy. It's like film. You know, there's the joy that comes with the colonoscopy. And what do you mean? We're going to, I mean, technology is great, but don't take away the fun.
Yeah, the colonoscopy really is the French press of medical procedures.
It really is. Somebody commented about the French press in the Bombardier's Lounge, didn't they?
Oh, yeah. I got that pulled up here somewhere. Oh, yeah. Okay. Jenny Miglis wrote, I've never posted before, but felt compelled after the discussion of the French press coffee maker on your latest podcast. This is definitely not a hipster coffee maker. I have used them for over 40 years. I've had all sizes over the years. Currently, I have a medium size and small size. Sometimes when I travel, I will pack one in my suitcase just to be sure I get a good cup of coffee in the morning. They are inexpensive, simple to use, and make an excellent cup of coffee. Jeannie, I couldn't agree with you more. They make a fantastic cup of coffee. I'm going to run home after we're done recording and go grab another one.
I just want to say, by the way, Jeannie, I also have a medium size and a small size, but no large.
Depends on the temperature, really.
It's medium or small. That's the best. never a grande. Just a medium or small.
Certainly not a venti. No, definitely not a venti. Oh,
all right. Photobomb is written and produced by... I'm actually looking for my notes. Photobomb is written and produced by Brewery Perry and Gary Hughes and edited by Faye Sfioretti. You can find us online. Join the group, the Bombardier's Lounge, on Facebook at facebook.com/group/Bombardier's Lounge.
Boombardiers.
Our podcast is photobombpodcast.com. Gary's is HughesFioretti.com.
Yes, it is.
Mine is BooRayPerry.com. And you can email us questions at photobombpodcast.com. We'll see you back here next week.
See you later.